Hello, good afternoon, and welcome to CIO Leadership Live. I'm your host, Mary Fran Johnson, the CEO of Mary Fran Johnson Media. This video show and podcast is produced and sponsored by my dear friends at CIO.com and the digital media division of Foundry, an IDG company. We're streaming live to you right now on LinkedIn and on our CIO channel on YouTube. And we invite, very cordially invite, our viewers today to compose and type in a few questions of your own for my guest. We have editors watching the chat streams on both LinkedIn and YouTube, and they're ready to pass along those incredibly good questions as they come in. And the questions you'll be sending in will be for my wonderful guest today, Katrina Redmond, who is the Executive Vice President and CIO at Eaton Corp. Based in Dublin, Ireland, Eaton is in the business of intelligent power management, serving customers in more than 170 countries worldwide and reporting sales last year of $23.2 billion. Its 90,000 plus employees produce and sell products, systems, and services that manage electrical and mechanical power. The company also makes industrial clutches, motors, fuel pumps, and other equipment. Katrina joined Eaton in 2021, right in the depths of the pandemic, to oversee the development and execution of the company's enterprise-wide technology and digital strategies, as well as to manage and lead the large IT organization of about 1,500 technologists internally and another 1,000 contractors. She reports directly to the CEO and chairman. Before she joined Eaton, Katrina was VP and CIO at Hubbell Incorporated, a Connecticut-based manufacturer of electrical and electronic products. And then before joining Hubbell back in 2019, she held for about 18 years, she worked for GE, where she held a number of top IT leadership and business positions at GE Industrial Solutions and GE Grid Solutions. Throughout her career, Katrina has earned a great reputation for leading successful business process change and digital transformations, all of that leveraging her deep expertise in Lean Six Sigma practices. Katrina, thanks for joining me here today. It's great to have you here.
Thank you, Mary Fran. It's nice to be here.
Let's start out with kind of a 30,000-foot view of what an intelligent power management industry is about. To me, that seemed like a relatively new term, adding intelligent in front of power management. So what does that descriptor indicate to your customers today?
Yeah, in Eaton's case, we're actually a 100-year-old company, and we're a growth business at this point in this intelligent power management space. And we specialize in energy efficient solutions that help our customers manage electrical and mechanical power, as you already referenced, mm-hmm. more reliably, efficiently, and safely. That includes things like our UPS systems, uninterruptible power supplies, mm-hmm. our power distribution units, and also our software that can be put in data centers and other types of networking environments. So we optimize and minimize our customers' environments, whether it's downtime, optimizing the power usage itself and mm-hmm. effectiveness, and then also reliability and sustainability, as well as energy efficiency. So there's just a lot of intelligence that now can be applied in these products that support these ecosystems, you know, through all yes. the connected, you know, process spaces, as well as our microprocessors that are being added to all of our products.
Right.
So those help our customers achieve those benefits.
Well, and it certainly sounds like digital services are very much front and center in this. And that's not really a big surprise. I mean, the financial industries and the power industries have all been great users and consumers of data for a long time now.
Yeah, absolutely. And data is more present and available than ever, and it's just going to continue to accelerate.
Yeah. Well, I've found when I talk with CIOs, I always make a point of asking, when you say digital transformation, which as we know is, as we would say in the Boston area here, it's a wicked buzzword. I mean, it's been around for years and years, and analysts are out there making tons of money, you know, telling people what it means for different industries. But when you think about the power management, the electrical and the grid and all that, what does it actually mean in for your industry? When you say something like, and maybe you avoid saying this in meetings with business people, but if you say digital transformation to other power management executives, what does that immediately signify for them? What does it mean in your industry?
Yeah, I mean, I think about, you know, the secular trends that are out there in the marketplace mm-hmm. in this world today. We've got energy transition, we've got electrical transformation, we've got electrification and digitization in general. You know, our products participate in all of those different trends. Mm-hmm. And over the next 3 to 5 years and beyond, you know, we're really positioned well in those spaces. So when you think about that, you think about investment in our sort of reindustrialization here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. with EV charging, with battery storage, with the semiconductors coming back to the U.S. There's a lot of opportunity there, you know, within our market space. Mm-hmm. And then you think about data centers and the growth, you know, the massive acceleration of data availability and just the size of, you know, the terabytes that are available of data, the data centers are on a massive upswing. So mm-hmm. whether you think about the hyperscalers with Microsoft and Amazon, et cetera, there's a lot of opportunity there for our products because we sell into those data centers. So we help them manage, improve the efficiency, the utilization of energy in those spaces.
Okay.
And then you think about, you know, how we consume, you know, energy and all of our infrastructure and mm-hmm. what that's doing to the utilities and the demand that that's putting on the utilities. So we help, you know, modernize and contemporize those infrastructures to help support those new electrical demands that right. are being put on the grid.
Right.
So there's a lot of different areas and places where it plays.
Mm-hmm.
And when people think about power management or discuss power management, these are all components of that discussion.
Yes. Well, and I think about, I'd mentioned that when you joined Eaton in 2021, we really were still in the depth of the pandemic. And yeah. I think the vaccines were only starting to become available at that point. So tell us about... I know that Eaton has done very well as a business over the last few years, regardless, but there were probably a number of big issues with just power consumption that landed in your lap when you joined in 2021. So talk a little bit about kind of the big picture impact that you've seen. You've been there now 3.5 years as the CIO. And when you think about the impact on Eaton's business and the customers during that time, what are some of the big trends that jump out for you?
Yeah, and I know other CIOs and other businesses are, you know, what the pandemic did was like gasoline on an already burning fire for digitization.
Ah.
It really sort of advanced the discussion, the conversation, the opportunity mm-hmm. in that digitization space. So over the last several years, that's not, you know, what happened during the pandemic that accelerated that is not going away. You know, it's continuing to accelerate.
Mm-hmm.
And as I mentioned about sort of the utility space in particular, just imagine you've got mobile devices, you've got iPads, you've got televisions, you've got connected washer and dryers and stoves mm-hmm. and refrigerators and you know, that your EV charger in the garage or wherever.
Yeah.
Those demands on the grid itself and every local community out there are just continuing to advance.
Mm-hmm.
So if I think about the big picture impact, that stuff just continues to accelerate.
Yeah.
And then you think about, you know, what happens in the whole, you know, AI space and how that's contributing to these data demands, because all, you know, the foundational components of AI are this data component. So you've got these explosions in data center growth
mm-hmm.
to be able to keep up with and advance in that area as well. So if I think about, you know, what the pandemic did to accelerate the new technologies that are coming on board that people are wanting to take advantage of, and then I think about our ability to provide intelligence from our connected products
mm-hmm.
that can give our customers insights to help improve their productivity you know, their ability to avoid downtime unnecessarily, plan for maintenance, all of those things, we're able to help contribute insights to that and really take our value proposition sort of up the curve.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just a lot of activity in the space, and Eaton is positioned well in this area in particular, these areas in particular.
Yes.
So it's really been, a interesting journey and an exciting journey.
Mm-hmm.
And the opportunities within Eaton to really help, move the ball forward and the game forward in these spaces, to help our customers, to help the environment, et cetera, are all, opportunities that are out there that are really changing rapidly.
Yeah. Well, when you talk with CIOs in other power management companies, what are you all trying to kind of tackle and solve the same common problems? Are there any areas where you feel like Eaton has got a lot to show others in your industry, kind of the competitors that are out there, maybe finding some better solutions to the issues that plague all of the industry? I want you to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, and I think what comes to mind really is sort of the sustainability space and the challenges that are mm-hmm. really globally present on reducing carbon footprint, improving, sustainability, reducing greenhouse gas emissions, water runoff, how do you get way more capable and way more responsible
mm-hmm.
in approaching the environment with these increasing, like accelerating exponentially, these demands on energy, and how do you do it in a cleaner way? So I think we're all struggling with how do we, get there, but not in the old context of carbon. How do you get there in a newer way where you're more efficient, where you're driving value propositions? And those value propositions go beyond, satisfying the data need. It's how are you doing it in a way that you're leaving the planet better than it exists today. I think we're all out there sort of struggling with how do we do that in this space.
Yeah.
I mean, I certainly think Eaton is doing well with the challenges that we have, what we're spending on research and development in this area,
mm-hmm.
Creating really strong goals for our 2030, sustainability effort, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So I just, this one to me really comes to mind when you ask that question. So,
okay.
And I think Eaton is well positioned in this space to help our customers achieve these goals.
Yeah. Well, one of the things, too, that you mentioned to me when we talked earlier was that you're spending a lot of your time and focus on looking at how you're operationalizing digital. And are there, how are you doing it in ways that it could be done better? What are talk about the challenges around that. When you say something like operationalizing digital services, perhaps, what does that call to mind, and what kind of successes have you had with the ability to do that so far?
Yeah, I mean, I think about, many different ways. You can think about digital that we're consuming internally for Eaton to make us better.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously how we can help our customers be better externally.
Yeah.
So we have a couple of different, work streams focused in these different areas. And on the external side, I would reference our BrightLayer product, which is really a marketplace for our customers to consume insights through subscription services, et cetera. These are new offerings.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the earlier stages of developing these outcomes and partnerships with our customers to leverage the data and information that we're getting from our connected products in support of their efforts and their spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an availability that's just grown over the first, the last several years. It's kind of a 3 to 4 year old endeavor where we're trying to grow in that space.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I think internally about, digitization and driving value, I think about how do we work more efficiently? How do we drive productivity? How are we focused on, focusing our time in areas where it adds the most benefit and value,
mm-hmm.
And trying to reduce and minimize some of the non-value added efforts. So, mm-hmm. Depending on which area of focus, we've got a couple of different avenues of work streams that we've got in those areas.
Yeah. Now, your role is fairly expansive at Eaton. You report to the CEO and the chairman. I wonder, is it information technology and all that that entails? Is operational technology also part of your purview, the OT and the IT?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's all of it. So it includes our operational technology, as well as cyber, as well as data. Mm-hmm. Data is a huge component. We have a chief data officer that's, working to help drive normalization and governance and our data components. And then we have various value streams, whether it's the revenue generating value streams and how customers interact with us, or internally how we take an order all the way through fulfillment and payment. So it's all of those different areas. And then we've added continuous improvement as a focus point, as well as value delivery. Like, how do we manage complex programs across multiple value streams or functions or ecosystems in order to deliver in a timeline that makes sense? Mm-hmm. So you don't get lost in all the minutia and everyone's individual priorities. How do you pull everything together to collaborate and drive a larger, a larger effort?
Yes.
So it's really encompasses all of those things.
Okay. Well, I know one of the things that you said that stuck, just kind of stood out to me. You said process and people are going to beat technology every time. So that, and that's almost sounded like a theme song for the way you lead as a CIO. Let's get into that a little bit more about how leading with the process and the people aspects. How have you operationalized that kind of theme with what you've done so far at Eaton in the last 3 years?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's an interesting one for me because obviously I'm in the digital technology space. Mm-hmm. So you don't expect necessarily that the first words from me will be process and people and how healthy are those things before we start digitizing. Yeah. So it's something I know when I talk about it internally with Eaton, when we talk about programs and things we want to do next, I don't want to just throw tech at everything.
Right.
There's so many things that we can do to improve if we just get our processes simplified, get rid of the non-value added components, get rid of the wait times and the, the multiple steps and the multiple hierarchies that we operate within. How do we smooth that and streamline that to make that more efficient? And then do we have the organizational structure to support a streamlined process? And how do we modify it in whatever way we need to in order to make sure that that's supportive of executing the process in a really operationally sound way and have really good operating metrics? And then from there, how can we layer in digitization to help, further accelerate or be a catalyst in whatever flow you're working in? So I've really, my team, and at first, our digital tech team, it was, getting them trained in lean, talking more about Kaizens and doing lean management and doing Gemba walks in an IT context was really foreign. It was a foreign concept to the organization to really talk in that way. But I'm hearing people come back to me after they've seen examples of how it works, saying this really does apply. This really does help our agile delivery. This really does help our cycle times. It helps us pull components together and remove roadblocks if we're doing daily stand-ups on how we're processing things. So they're seeing it and starting to appreciate it, which I'm really happy about. We just need to accelerate our efforts. We have a lot of things that we need to improve our delivery to Eaton internally. And there's so many opportunities for us to improve the process components and then obviously take advantage of tech where it makes sense, but not your only focus area.
Okay.
So that's some of the effort that we've been in the last couple of years since I've been here.
Well, and if people didn't know that you had a lengthy background at GE, where that's the first time I've over the years I've interviewed so many CIOs who are that, someone called it the diaspora from General Electric, all of the CIOs who are out there, and that focus on business process and people issues first seems very much the kind of bedrock that you developed there. And am I guessing that correctly? Or
no, 100%, 100%. And before I was at GE, I worked in manufacturing, and I, lean was where I started. I was an industrial engineer when I started initially, and,
Okay.
you know, hone those skills on the manufacturing floor, but they're highly applicable in these, you know, transactional environments.
Yeah.
We just don't apply them as readily. And there's so much opportunity there that, you know, I hope we can continue to take advantage of.
Yeah. So your business, your other business peers at the executive level, they probably had to get used to the first ideas out of your mouth were not about a new product that you could apply to this. It was more about the business approach and the people organization.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about what you've done about your organization. Having been there, there won't be anything brand new because you've been there for 3 years now. But tell me about how you reorganized or how you have structured the IT organization around some of these principles, especially the lean principles and the ways to approach and work with the business. I know that you made a number of great changes, so let's talk about them.
Yeah, so we, you know, coming in, we just sort of making the assessment about our team and where we could add value, you know, doing all those town halls, and those touch points with the organization globally, you know, all the different receivers of our services, mm-hmm. trying to understand where we could provide improvement. How do we help them help themselves? How do we enable them to deliver what they need to deliver? Because we're such an enablement kind of foundational component for the business at large.
Yeah.
Trying to understand, you know, those inputs first. And then from there, we moved into a value stream model where we're organized around sort of the process flows, whether it's call it inquiry to order,
mm-hmm.
and then call it maybe order to fulfillment or order to payment. Looking at those value streams, how they connect, is there a digital thread that makes sense and is simplified? Do we understand the capabilities of those applications?
Mm-hmm.
And then we actually organized our team around those various value streams, trying to think of ourselves more as a product lifecycle management organization where we take advantage of the ERPs or we take advantage of the other, you know, Salesforce, the other technologies that we use.
Mm-hmm.
Are they driving the outcomes that the business needs? Do we have the adoption that we're supposed to have? Do we get our total cost of ownership for those licenses and those values? Are we getting real value?
Mm-hmm.
And having somebody look at that end to end and understand where things stop and start, where you have gaps, you can do that better in a value stream model. So we did a big restructure around those value streams.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned earlier, you know, obviously we have our cyber organization. We're really focusing on, you know, safety, security, defense. You know, how do you respond when a disaster or an opportunity happens? And then also service, our cyber team being service minded. You know, the mm-hmm. business is out there trying to consume new technologies and deliver, you know, new results on connected devices on the shop floors and
yes.
et cetera. Well, a lot of times cyber is a huge component of making sure that those things are safe and secure.
Right.
I'm hoping to do it safely and securely, but doing it in a cycle time that the business can, that will help the business,
mm-hmm.
you know, achieve their end state. And then we've got the continuous improvement organization as well as sort of a value delivery office and improving our cycle times to delivery.
Yeah.
So those are, you know, that's how we sort of restructured. And again, we're at the early stages. There'll be more phases of restructuring
mm-hmm.
In the sense that how do we work in the model in a more optimal way? And the delivery is what we expect it to be. And how do we continuously improve that to the benefit of the business and our customers?
Now, is a value delivery office, is that a fancier way of looking at a project management office? Is that a PMO in different clothing? Or what does that mean when you talk about a value delivery office? Because that sounds like a very connected piece of the business.
Absolutely. And we think about it in a value delivery way because it's more action oriented.
All right.
As opposed to just normal program management. So we're really trying to have that be an accelerator to,
mm-hmm.
you know, improve cycle times faster to outcomes. You know, how do we deliver complex programs instead of in 5 years, an ERP over, you know, 200 locations? How do you get that to 3 years? How do you get it to 2 years? How do you really get on your front foot with your your delivery components. How do you use technology more effectively to drive delivery?
Okay.
And there's so many pieces that have to come together within a digital technology organization where if the coordination isn't across the ecosystem, things just stop and start all the time.
Yeah.
You get a lot of wasted time, a lot of wasted motion. And that focus is meant to help us drive and improve getting to value sooner.
Okay. Is there an example of something that really kind of shines in what the Value Delivery Office has been able to impact over the last few years?
Yeah, so honestly, it's new. So we mm-hmm. started this as we did our, you know, our big, you know, move to value streams. And we're all honestly getting more deeply into it now.
Okay.
But call it third quarter of last year, we really started bringing together from a manufacturing standpoint, how those teams are consuming technology, all the Wi-Fi, all the OT, all the connected devices within our own shops.
Mm-hmm.
How can they be more productive? How do we get to a solution more quickly with our site experience teams to deliver improved performance? And, you know, that stuff goes into ticketing systems. Cyber mm-hmm. has to do their piece. We've got the infrastructure team that does theirs. We've got, you know, our shop floor system, our digital technology team that supports the shop floor has to do their piece. If that stuff isn't coordinated, mm-hmm. the poor plant is going to be waiting. Okay, that's one ticket for this. That's another ticket for that. That's a third ticket for the other component. We're not coordinating ourselves. We're sort of doing them in a silo.
Yes.
We are meeting literally directly with the plants on enterprise level issues and driving them to closure.
Okay.
And then this office helps us accelerate that. And then we also can translate those enterprise problems across 200 plus other manufacturing locations.
Mm-hmm.
So every one of them are experiencing the same challenges, but we solve a one-off and then everybody else is out there trying to solve the same thing. So the delivery office, what we've been focused on with five key plants mm-hmm. is solving these enterprise problems and then translating that out to the rest of the ecosystem. So yeah. we can actually solve the problem. It doesn't resurface. So we're in the early stages of mm-hmm. having that stand up, you know, being stood up, and then we're in the process of learning from that and then translating it out to the larger ecosystem.
Okay.
That's an example. And
right,
can you imagine just making your team more productive? They're not waiting for some sort of a technology solution to help them. We're getting out there and trying to do it more proactive.
Yeah. Well, it does sound like, though, that there is probably a huge technology, maybe even an AI and data component to this. Is there anything around that that you can tell us more about?
Yeah. So I think everyone's really kind of in the earlier stages of how they take advantage of Gen AI or mm-hmm. AI, for example. So, yes, we're working and creating proof points of opportunity within E10 to take advantage of these new technologies. We're really consuming a lot of our software mm-hmm. companies that we're partnered with, their AI, for example, Microsoft,
mm-hmm.
they're spending a lot of time on Copilot, for example. Copilot can be used kind of across our ecosystem. We're trying to train everybody on how do you use it? How do you consume it? How do you get advantage from it?
Yeah.
And then we've got ServiceNow, you know, they are helping us with insights from the tickets that are getting implemented, our input to try to provide real root cause corrective action so that we can get non-repeat. So mm-hmm. we're taking advantage of our third-party software, and then we're, you know, trying to take advantage of the capabilities as well with, you know, our internal documents, language models partnered with the shop floor. How do mm-hmm. we get that information and insights out of people's heads,
yes.
out of the file cabinet, out of a paper catalog, into a technology where then you can just query it
yes.
and find answers to things that may be challenging you. So we're, you know, working in those different spaces to add value, both internally as well as externally,
mm-hmm.
but trying to make everybody learn about the technologies and trying to use them So a lot of focus there, but where everyone's in early days about what we can use it for and how we can really drive business outcomes.
Yeah. Well, I've noticed I've been asking these kinds of questions to recent guests on the show. My last guest 2 weeks ago, we talked about how AI could pull together the kind of information and present it to like the superintendent of a building, a big building that has lots and lots of moving parts in it. And it seems like that is one of the most clearly immediate benefits you can get from AI that doesn't put the company in any danger of going externally with information. I haven't run into very many people that want an AI process handling like communication with customers, because there's just one little mistake could end up being headlines, right? So
absolutely, yes, we're all very aware about that and cautious.
I know, sure. Yeah. Well, and I think the caution is probably a really good thing for CIOs to be exercising now. I had one CIO who attended a meeting in Boston, and they had like 30 different CIOs from the area talking about AI and what they were using and what they were doing. And it was very much part of it is like, well, it's really just math. It's more data, you know, this way. But then the early days and everybody's enthusiasm about it makes it probably a bigger spotlight on it than there has been before. Can you remember any big technology trend where everybody on the executive committee was coming to you probably with ideas and suggestions and, hey, I read this article about AI and what are we doing with it? Are you getting that as well?
Yeah, this hype curve on AI in particular, Gen AI, and what it's doing, it's honestly nothing. I've never seen it.
Okay.
Like the fury and the pace and the excitement and the trying to participate in it. It, across everything, whether it's a legal department or it's a, you know, an HR department or a sales team, or it's across the spectrum. And I've never seen anything catch fire like this that really kind of goes across every area.
Yeah.
Where people are trying to figure out, how can I use this? How can I convert it into value?
Yeah.
As quickly as possible to you know, keep ahead of the game and the curve and what everyone else is doing.
Right.
It's something I've never witnessed before.
Well, and so that probably makes it all the more important. One of the things you'd mentioned to me was how you're trying to create a process model for the consumption of technology. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's kind of one of your, you have North Stars, right? That you're heading toward as a leader. Where does AI fit into that, into the idea of how we consume technology? And is this something that your value delivery office is? Who owns that, I guess I'm asking, on your leadership team, or do you all own it?
So with AI in particular, and I've not ever seen this before either, it's really a cross, you know, collaborative effort within Eaton in total. So the C-suite has several people that are engaged in the steering committee specifically focused on AI.
Okay.
And I've never, you know, seen something, you know, sort of spun up in that way before around a technology.
Right.
And it's, how do we harness the ideas? How do we sort of farm for ideas in that space?
Mm-hmm.
Understand the outcomes that can come from it, and then focus our efforts on delivering it. And not, because everyone's out there with their new idea. We're trying to coordinate those ideas and really try to measure the value proposition of those ideas. Mm-hmm. And then how do we work on those and drive delivery? Or how do we work on it with a proof point and understand that, you know what, it's not yielding what we expected. Mm-hmm. How do you pivot and drive to value in another area? The one thing I know about AI before the steering committee and having some sort of a funnel of ideas is that everyone is randomly trying something. And if we're doing that, we're not really leveraging the strength and the collective, you know, power and collaboration that we can drive together. And then really just making sure that the business outcome is there. And, you know, we don't want to dilute the efforts. It's not an unlimited space to play in. And you really want to focus your efforts on those ideas that you know will lead to value.
Yeah.
And if you're not seeing the value, you want to be able to pivot and use that resource, you know, power in another direction. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're doing. We're trying to coordinate ourselves, pick things that make sense based on business outcomes, and then drive.
Yeah. Well, and you'd mentioned too that technology today is moving so much faster than any of us can really absorb. But as the CIO and EVP in charge of all this stuff, you don't have much of a choice, right?
Yeah. So, for sure. You got to lean into it.
Yes, exactly. What are you doing to kind of stay ahead of this curve? Are you finding that a lot of your downtime reading is articles about what AI is going to do to society? Or is this something that you talk about a lot with your chief data officer, maybe?
Yeah, no, and yeah, he's in the middle of this whole thing with the data components and supporting a kind of a global effort across Eaton's sort of data governance and structure and system. So he's, you know, neck deep and then we're these forums, you know, there's a forum on AI every other minute. There's so many CIOs we're engaging in different ways, you know, sort of discussing what we're seeing, how it's being used. Where do you see value propositions, you know, materializing in the reading and the constant? There's an article every other, you know, minute, not every other day, but every other minute. Like by the time we've spoken, somebody's created five other things that we'll need to read up on by the end of the day because something's coming out every minute on, you know, advancing these large language models into doing more and more of the work components that you don't necessarily expect in the beginning or attribute in the beginning. So it's a really, you know, fast paced space, and we're sending out information to our C-suite and the rest of the Eaton community so that everyone can sort of learn about the value proposition, what it is, what it isn't.
Yes.
You know, what we're trying to do in areas where we want to apply it, et cetera, the communication schedule around AI within Eaton, you know, trying to keep everyone sort of up to speed.
Yeah.
And things to think about and growing our own, you know, our own knowledge around it.
Well, and you've probably been using various AI technologies and practices in the data, in your enterprise data architecture and all that for several years, probably even before you got there. Is a lot of this very specific to the Gen AI, which has that, you know, that consumer-facing aspect to it that I think is making everybody think that they know what AI is.
Oh, my Lord, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's funny because we keep talking about these large language models and, you know, machine learning and all these different spaces that have been sort of, you know, evolving over time. Mm-hmm. But this Gen AI piece is certainly accelerating the conversation around. No one was as excited about machine learning and shop floor capabilities of doing connected sensors on the floor and the insights that can drive. And then what could you take from those insights?
I know.
Yeah. This Gen AI piece in particular has really caught, you know, everyone's interest for sure.
Yeah. I remember when RPA was being written around, robotic process automation, right? I never heard, you know, that never made the cover of any business magazines. You know, people would say, oh, ML and RPA and blah, blah, and nobody was really reacting to it very much. And actually related to, we have a question from our alert and watching audience right now. And this will pivot us over a little bit toward talent management questions, because this is, how do you implement automation and how does it add value against the question of talent retention? So that's, you know, one of the other lurking fears that everyone has about AI is it coming to take my job, right?
Yeah.
So how are you approaching that? Is that coming up as an issue? And what would your advice be?
Yeah, you know, what's interesting about this, and I'll tell you, just like everyone else, it concerns me where it may go. And our responsibility in managing that more appropriately than we may have done things in the past. But I think of the same conversation around lean when it was introduced to shop floors and it's going to take the job and it's, you know, we're doing automation and we need fewer people to execute work. What you hope and you endeavor to drive is that it allows you to work on more higher value added areas. But there's still a need for some of the skilled workmanship in all of these different areas. So as much as it concerns me about where it could go, I know that we've got, you can't escape it. And you want to try to be an architect in your own future, so to speak. So lean into it, try to learn about it, try to figure out how you can participate as fully as possible in it, Where do you see yourself evolving as a result of this technology in particular? And don't let that, fear dissuade you from it. What we did back in the day on the lean piece was we let attrition sort of work itself out. We didn't go after jobs based on a lean delivery of something. We shifted people around the ecosystem, retrained, retooled into different areas as these automation opportunities are lean process designs, work their way through. And I want to see that same sort of thing happen within this AI space. How can we leverage that technology and use it to do things that are more commodity style pieces of an effort, and then get people retrained and retooled in other areas to add value differently? But I certainly understand the concern. So with talent, you want to have people that want, can evolve with the change. Change is always going to exist. How can you, keep your talent, educated and framed and the culture moving and that sort of a change type direction as opposed to standing still and static, because you can't do that.
That very good answer to the question. Thank you for that. Talk a little bit about what you are doing for talent retention. Have you introduced a lot of additional education opportunities for the staff? Are there areas where you're, like everyone else, still looking for data engineers, really need cybersecurity expertise, or has it more of it directed now toward data and AI expertise? How is all that kind of impacting what you're doing today?
Yeah, so as we're looking for, we have a, a ITDP program. So it's a talent development program for, our technical team. We are, trying to, tap into the universities out there that are, creating and advancing and evolving skills in these AI spaces, as well as data and data science, et cetera. So we're really targeting, potentially differently, changing our ratios. Obviously, cloud is also another area that continues to evolve. So how do you continue to move your team in those directions? So absolutely. We are also, looking at various training programs that we can offer our technical teams and our technologists to continue to learn and promote, skills in these spaces in particular. And then, from a talent perspective, really trying to find or develop muscles within the team, the technical team, to think about business outcomes and supply chain differently. Think about, it from a business perspective, not necessarily the technical perspective, so that you can take what you know about technology and apply it to forecasting for supply chain, for example, or, how do you, improve SIOP processes, et cetera, applying technologies. So also really expanding people's thinking around, it's great to know technology, but it's really great to know technology and understand the business. So giving the team, growing the team in opportunities where they're really directly business connected is also a great opportunity to drive, talent retention. And then we're trying to even attract people from other parts of Eaton's ecosystem into technology that has some of that deep business expertise. So trying to have that sort of cross-pollination within the Eaton environment overall.
That's really neat. And actually, it plays into what we've started talking about here, plays into another question from our audience. As a leader with so many direct and indirect team members in so many different countries, how do you continue to motivate and inspire them? And
Yeah, I think this,
I was
yeah,
just
this
wondering if you could attract people from the business by saying, you want to work more in AI? Come on
Yeah.
over here. You could
Exactly. No, that
maybe
certainly helps. It's an
you
attractor for sure.
could Yeah.
But that's a great question. I think it's always difficult. When I came here 3 years ago, at GE, I had 18 years, and you create a network and
Oh,
you
yeah.
advance partnerships and relationships. So that can be some of it. But Eaton, I'm 3 years in, I'm going on my fourth year. trying to get to know everyone, getting out during the pandemic. When I first got here, I couldn't even travel to meet the team.
Yeah.
So I'm doing more of that, getting out. My leadership team, we all have a calendar, trying to travel the globe and meet our team members and get really direct connected with them to understand what they need out in their spaces to help drive value from their perspective.
Yeah.
It's a constant challenge, like trying to make sure we're driving together in the same direction. There was a lot of change, you know, with the restructure that we had and, you know, with the respect of having changed a lot of different things within our environment that wasn't easy to absorb. It wasn't necessarily well received. It was a, you know, a bit of a, it was a definitely a climb up a hill or a mountain.
Yeah.
And now we're really at the part where I think people are starting to see the value and the changes. You know, our engagement scores, you know, have gone up. We do very specific meetings and engagements out in the whole, you know, Eaton IT environment to understand concerns. We do surveys to try to figure out where people's heads are.
Mm-hmm.
And then we create action plans to address their areas of concern or opportunity.
Okay.
And we try to work those very diligently and be very communicative about the work we're trying to do. Because this is, nothing happens without the team. Like, right. We're stronger together. And if we are together, we can achieve, you know, really amazing things for Eaton. And Eaton's worth it. It's a great company. So, you know, trying to put that all together and really, you know, support the team and what they need and how they're evolving through the changes is really important.
Yeah.
And as part of our strategy and trying to, you know, help keep us together as a team.
Yeah.
Facing forward.
Well, and you have a lot of your own leadership background is at industrial and manufacturing companies and General Electric and all. How does the culture, the company culture at Eaton, what have you noticed about it and how does it compare to some of the like the hard driving GE culture or other industrial type companies you've been at? Is there anything substantially different about it that you've noticed?
Yeah, that, you know, honestly, there are similarities. You still get the hard charging, you know, focus on outcomes.
There's a lot of engineers there. Yeah, exactly.
Yes, the engineer mindset. I mean, yes. This is an engineering company. It's a products company. We make tangible objects.
Yes.
We wear hard hats and steel-toe shoes, and we, you know, deliver very meaningful product to, you know, our customers. And there's a lot of pride in that, and there should be. So that's part of our culture, sort of the pride in our product and what we're doing for the environment and the climate and the community is a really big part of our culture. There's a genuineness about Eaton that I find very attractive. There's the integrity with which the team approaches, delivering results, you know, the way we focus on the community, and like we have that as part of our sustainability effort is volunteering. We have hours that we volunteer and then we, you know, we're trying to, you know, deliver advanced metrics and diversity and gender diversity, ethnicity, the cultures. So there's a lot of really like important areas that are important to the community at large beyond Eaton that make it a very, very, you know, nice, good place to work. You feel like you're part of something that's trying to drive for a better outcome, you know, for the larger community, which is, I think, a huge, and that's different. That's a little bit different than the other places I've worked. And the focus in those areas is very specific and deliberate with metrics and really trying to make a difference, not to have it just be a talking point, but we're actually trying to drive diversity and sustainability and some of those other things that are so important.
Yeah. Well, and we were talking before we got on this call today, we were talking about the the diversity and equity and inclusion issues in technology in general, which so many of us have been. I can remember watching this back in the 90s even, and the number of women in IT seemed to be climbing. We were up to like 35% of the workforce were women in IT, and I think the numbers are all now in the 20s. They've kind of fallen down. So How is that working at Eaton? Is there anything special you're doing? Is there anything, any organization that you connect with to make sure that there is more diversity, more women, more people of color that are attracted to IT?
Yeah, and I mean, we do partnerships, you know, out as we're trying to do recruitment in diverse, you know, spaces.
Yes.
The gender piece in particular for us, it's still a challenge. To your point, it went up and then it went down. And we're, you know, the gender component, really trying to, you know, attract more women into our field is still a challenge. And I think about, you know, remote work and, you know, not moving everybody and relocating everybody, because women are, you know, oftentimes in a partnership where, you know, their husband is also in a job in a local community. They can't always pick up and move for a role. The good thing about Eaton is we've got locations in a lot of different places where you can be at an Eaton location and not necessarily have to do the relocation. So we've got to continue to challenge the status quo on how many times people have to get up and move for the job. Can we take advantage of our local locations, because Eaton's such a, you know, a broadly distributed industrial company. So we've got to think about that differently, you know, and then we've got to be more targeted, you know, going after other ethnicities, you know, and other populations. So we continue to be challenged in some of these spaces, and we're, you know, setting, you know, how we interview, what does the interview slate look like? Are you starting with a diverse slate for the interviews? If you're not even starting there, then you're obviously never going to get to a better place, a more diverse place. So really making sure that whole process at each area. And then once you've gotten the talent, how do you retain it? How do you understand what's, you know, what is out there and what may be challenging, you know, maintaining the gains? So it's, there's a whole host of activities and focus that we have in those spaces, and then setting metrics for us to, you know, continue to climb those percentages.
Well, and one of the things I was thinking, I wanted to just pivot back to it a little bit, the Bright Layer Hub, that's a very public-facing part of Eaton as your digital marketplace. I probably neglected to ask you a little bit more about that. Is that, does that play a role in helping with recruitment, giving you something you can point to that people like, well, check this out. This is our digital marketplace. Because you wouldn't really expect a great big industrial behemoth of a company to necessarily have a digital marketplace. So tell me about a Bright Layer Hub. And is that something that is part of your digital services group, or how is that managed? What does it produce?
So we, you know, we have, it's a digital experience hub. It's a marketplace, as you referenced. And it is, the innovation of Eaton is definitely an attractor for talent, just to tie those things together. So things like BrightLayer, what we're doing on energy efficiency and the power management space, sustainability, all of those things are part of the attraction to come to Eaton. So from a talent perspective, talking about those things, making sure people are educated on what we provide is a big deal for attracting talent. And in particular with BrightLayer, you know, we're at the early stages of this, but, you know, creating that digital marketplace where we, you know, can partner with our customers and we can take data and information on all the millions of products that we've, you know, sold over the years and give them the ability to take that information and drive to better solutions for their outcomes, improve their and optimize their ecosystem so they suffer less unplanned downtime, you know, making sure that monitoring and diagnostics is a strong part of the equation How do we use our technologies on shop floors?
Yes.
How do we ingrain cyber into IoT efforts? All of that is part of that Brightlayer Experience Hub and really solving customer, problems and issues and making that a part of that marketplace for others to consume. So it's definitely an attractive part of our portfolio that we're working hard to grow. And it's certainly an advantage from a talent development perspective when everybody can see the innovation that's out there that we're driving, for sure.
Is that, and I'm probably making a logical leap that isn't really there, but it sounds like that might be the kind of place where AI technologies are either already in operation or there may be things that are planned for the future. Is there any of that you can talk about?
Yeah, so absolutely. I mean, we're applying these large language models in different ways to solve these issues for our customers, solve issues, on our shop floors. And then if we're consuming those solutions, then we can have others consume those solutions as a subscription service. So there's lots of opportunity there. We're also applying, engineering is a big part of, part of our ecosystem, obviously, in product development. Driving down cycle time in, delivering product changes or advancements that we can help, innovate, internally and with our customers externally. So AI is definitely a part and parcel, of that as well.
Now, is the Brightlayer Hub something that is one of the areas of the company that IT owns, or are you in partnership with other parts of the business on that?
Yeah, so the forward-facing external component of Brightlayer is owned by, our business segments.
Okay.
So they drive the sales, the customer partnerships. We do a lot of the delivery of the infrastructure and the hardware. And then we have another team within engineering that helps drive some of the product innovation component. We don't do the product innovation piece, but we do creating the API configurations, creating, the service, the technical support, within sort of the DevSecOps arm of our team to support those efforts. So it's an ecosystem, quite honestly, and a partnership between a couple of different functions within Eaton.
Yeah, I hear the word ecosystem so much more often today from IT leaders in all different industries, along with another E word, empathy. That's something that got extremely big during remote working times, the pandemic, which actually brings me to our closing question here. I wanted you to reflect a little bit on what you have learned or what has changed in you as a leader in your own style in these last few years. How is the Katrina Redman, who is the CIO at Eaton, different from your days at GE or at the Connecticut Hubble?
That's a great question, and I've actually been thinking about it recently.
Okay.
And I even, in the context of my gender in this space, this digital technology space, as we were just talking, I mean, we're in the 20% or less range, and I don't know how many globally, how many CIOs are female. I keep thinking about, am I representing my gender well? And am I being as forthcoming with my opinions and how I'm thinking and sort of challenging unconscious bias that may exist out there? I'm way more comfortable in my skin in this day, today than I was, back in my GE days or Hubble days, or even 3 years ago when I first came here. At GE, I got to an SEB level, which I think there was 120 females out of 300,000 employees that made it to that level when I was there. I think I'm the only EVP female at Eaton currently. So there's a huge opportunity for others as well. But I'm trying to figure out, how do I help my own gender?
Yes.
Try to evolve in a technical space that's typically not, female dominated.
Right.
And am I doing enough to help promote, women, and am I, including that as part of my objectives, because we need to drive diversity, but am I personally driving, outcomes for my own gender? So I, from a leadership perspective, all the other things, you flex different muscles depending on what you're, what you need to flex, listen more, create the vision, try to listen to others drive, try to be the driver, depending on what circumstance, you flex different muscles. But I think today I'm really trying to, make sure, I want to leave it better than I found it. Like everything, I want to be a builder. I want to build something that we can all be proud of together and have us work as a community toward positive outcomes. And I really think about that as a legacy more than I've ever, thought about it in the past. And part of that's age, obviously, and recognizing the gender challenges, et cetera. But I'm really thinking more, broadly about that at this point in my career than I had in the past.
Good, good. Well, I tend to think, and this again is my bias having been in technology media for so long, I think visibility and getting out there and, like speaking up. And I was always making this pitch when I was running the CIO events division at CIO at the magazine and then later at CIO.com, I kept saying, come and be on stage, get out there. I mean, the more you see people, the more visibility. I think of even with the late Queen Elizabeth, she used to say that, well, people have to see me to believe me, to like know that I'm over here doing great things, which it sounds like you really have been doing at Eaton. So I'm so glad you were able to make the time today for this additional visibility. And it has been delightful talking to you today. So thank you for joining us.
You as well, Mary Fran. Thank you for having me, and I really have enjoyed it. So
good.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
That's always one of my promises to my CIOs who don't do this kind of thing a lot. I say, really, you'll have a good time. The time will fly by, and we got some good questions from our audience as well.
Terrific. So, thank you.
All right. Thank you, too. If you joined us a little late today and you're just thinking, oh, I wish I'd seen this whole interview, don't worry. We have the full episode later today right here on the LinkedIn channel, but it'll also live on in CIO.com, which has an entire library of our CIO Leadership Live show, and also on CIO's YouTube channel. CIO Leadership Live is additionally available as an audio podcast wherever you find your podcasts. I hope that you enjoyed and benefited and were enriched by today's conversation with CIO Katrina Redmond of Eaton Corporation. I'll be back again next month on Wednesday, May 15th at noon Eastern, when I'll be speaking with CIO Kathy Kay of the Principal Financial Group. Please do take a moment to subscribe to CIO's YouTube channel, where you can find more than 125 episodes of our Leadership Live program, as well as several international editions of the podcast that are featuring CIOs from Canada, India, New Zealand, and Australia. We are CIOs are a worldwide phenomenon, and I feel like the world would not run without all of you out there. So thanks very much for joining us today, and I hope we'll see you again next time.